Good afternoon, Your Honors. Please, the court. My name is John Glenn, number 26804. I represent Star Ranch and Soaring Eagles Orchards. And the two cases before the court today is 11CA504 and 11CA505. Just a little bit of a background on the cases, Your Honors. Basically, my clients went to the bank. They wanted to develop some land and build some houses down in El Paso County. They had gone to the bank and requested that they get a construction loan. The construction loan was granted prior to the loan closing. The bank went in and they knew that there were some restrictions with regard to the operating agreement for Star Ranch. Soaring Eagles Orchards, and I abbreviate that SEO, but Soaring Eagles Orchards was in a position to be a member of Star Ranch, but they had loaned Star Ranch money prior to getting the construction loan. They went in and subordinated that on the premise that the operating agreement had a 40% loan-to-value limitation in it, as well as there was going to be a guarantee that they would, if they subordinated their position to the bank, that there was a guarantee by Nicholson Camino, who was the manager of Star Ranch at the time, such that if anything happened, the bank would be able to come out with the first 40% of the equity in the land and the project, and they would have the remaining amount of that. Unfortunately, the bank released the guarantee without getting Soaring Eagles Orchards' approval to release the guarantee, which basically left Soaring Eagle Orchards out in the cold and had nothing but a non-recourse loan at that point, because the bank took first position. We have several arguments with regard to the errors made. First of all, with regard to Soaring Eagles Orchards, they never actually ever made it to trial. Everything was dismissed on the 12B5 motions before Judge Prince in El Paso County District Court. And as a result of that, they never got their day in court. The claims that were there, SEO, Soaring Eagles Orchards, was not in direct contract on the loan documents for the construction loan, but there were several claims, tort claims, as well as breach of contract claims. Those were all dismissed by the lower court.
Excuse me, counsel. The contract is the contract between Kirkpatrick Bank and Star Ranch.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
What standing does SEO have to bring a breach of contract claim against Kirkpatrick Bank?
Well, Your Honor, they were there was a subordination agreement.
It's the subordination agreement you're talking about for breach of contract, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And that was dismissed. The subordination agreement subordinated the original $3.5 million loan that Soaring Eagles Orchards had on the project to Kirkpatrick Bank. And so in terms of that, that was a breach of contract. But the tortious claims also went to the fact that the guarantee was released without their knowledge or approval from Nicholson Camino, which caused Nicholson Camino to basically pull out of the whole project and left my clients holding the bag.
So let me back up for just a second, counsel.
Certainly.
All right, so at trial, well, you didn't get to trial, you said, but had you gone there, you were alleging a breach of the subordination agreement?
Well, breach of contract against Kirkpatrick Bank for releasing the guarantee. They were attempting to also increase the 40% loan-to-value numbers, which was never agreed to by anyone. And when they went in originally, Your Honors, they knew that the 40% loan-to-value was contained in that. The agency law is pretty clear with regard to what you can and cannot do. And there was a memo, an email that went back and forth between the banks regarding the 40% loan-to-value as well as the guarantee. And as stated in the briefs, the 40% loan-to-value was in place so that would protect Soaring Eagles Orchards and not allow that number to go to a higher number so they would be left with nothing. But because the guarantee was released, that's exactly what happened. They were left with a non-recourse loan at that point and had nothing to come back out.
So under your understanding of that floating cap, each time a monthly payment was due, a new appraisal had to be made to determine whether or not the capital was out of proportion?
No, Your Honor. As Your Honor's, I'm sure, well aware, a construction loan gets paid out. It doesn't get paid out all at once. If it had gotten paid out all at once, it would have been...
Okay, but each payment, there had to be a separate appraisal of the property?
No, Your Honor. The maximum payout on that loan was $8.7 million for a $12-plus million project. And the 40% loan-to-value did not change with regard to each payment that was made. That was based on the $8.7 million total loan to be paid out. That 40% loan to value was based on...
But the value would change from time to time, right?
Well, the value could change from time to time. It could also change based on the sale of lots. When they would sell a lot or they would do additional improvements to the property, the value would only go up at that point.
But so what... Under your theory, therefore, wouldn't it be necessary to do a new appraisal every time money is paid out in order to determine whether or not the 40% value cap had been exceeded?
No, Your Honor, because the value of the property with the improvements would have increased, not decreased. And so
how would you know that without doing an appraisal? I mean, property values have plunged enormously in the relevant time period.
Well, in late 2007, 2008, the market did indeed crash. And values went down. However, when the loan was originated, the numbers were such that the $8.7 million was the loan amount that was going to be used as a construction loan based on the value of the property at that time.
So that was the relevant point in time to judge the 40% cap, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Now, this 40% argument was, the floating cap argument, was rejected by the trial judge, correct?
Well, with regard to Soaring Eagles Orchards, they never made it to trial, Your Honor, so they didn't have their day in court. But with regard to Star Ranch, that argument was brought up before Judge Prince, and I was not the attorney that argued the case, and the recording equipment went down, but it's my understanding from prior counsel.
He ruled as a matter of law that the contract did not involve a floating cap, correct?
That's my understanding.
If we uphold that ruling, what does that do to your case vis-a-vis Soaring Eagles?
Well, in terms of a floating cap, what I understand a floating cap to be would be the amount of money that could be lent out based on new appraisals, but that was never done, Your Honor, never requested by any of the parties. So when you say a floating cap, if it's 40% and the value of the property increased, that number would obviously go up. If that number decreased, that number would obviously go down.
Does your cause of action hinge on a finding of a floating cap?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, Your Honor.
Does your tortious interference claim hinge on a finding? It does, doesn't it? It hinge on a finding that Kirkpatrick Bank breached its loan agreement?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Because if they didn't breach, then there would be no tortious interference to occur. Right?
Correct. And with regard to the tortious interference and the tort claims that were brought on both in both cases, the claim was that because the guarantee was released and because they failed to fund interest that they indicated that they would fund, Soaring Eagles Orchards had got out of the project. Their note was basically no good anymore, and Nichols and Camino completely got out of the project and left everybody holding the bag at that point with regard to my clients. They didn't want to manage the project anymore, and they were a big builder down there. They were very important to that project, and because the bank released that guarantee, there was no way and Nichols and Camino said, okay, we're done, we're out of here. We don't need to stay in this anymore, which just left everybody holding the bag. Basically, I think what Judge Prince did was he whittled these claims down to a point where there was only one breach of contract claim left. He wanted to get rid of that, and it was very clear that he was trying to do so so that he could, I don't know if he cleared his docket, but he got rid of all of the other claims other than one breach of contract claim against Kirkpatrick Bank. Now, having said that, the 12B5 motions that were dismissed for Soaring Eagles Orchards and for Star Ranch, the economic loss rule would indicate that Soaring Eagles Orchards was not in direct contract with Kirkpatrick Bank on that construction loan and that those loan documents other than the subordination agreement. And as a result of that, they did not have the ability to do anything when they did not get paid their interest and were not funded by that loan draw. Now, I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal if I can. It looks like I'm down to about 4.5 minutes. And I'd like to reserve about 4 minutes if I can for rebuttal.
You may, absolutely.
With regard to the other issues, there was evidence presented at trial that would have allowed the claims to be modified and amended, and Judge Prince also denied that motion to amend the pleadings to conform the evidence which was presented at trial. There's an argument by Kirkpatrick Bank that the...
Counsel, let me interrupt you for a moment, and Bailiff, would you stop the clock? We're exactly at 4 minutes. When you say that you want to reserve the 4 minutes, I just wanted you to know that your time is still moving while you're speaking during,
yes, Your
during your opening. Okay.
Okay. My last comment would be that they, with regard to the, I lost my train of thought, I apologize. So.
Sorry about that. I just wanted to make sure we were clear about
that's
that.
That's okay. No, I understand.
You were talking about the evidence that came in against Star Ranch?
Well, with regard to the tortious interference claims, Star Ranch is claiming that they had agreements with both Soaring Eagles Orchards and Nichols and Camino, as well as third parties, that were outside of the loan agreement, and based on what Kirkpatrick Bank and the other banks, Academy Bank and Colorado Capital Bank did, they were forced to... Their tort claims were completely dismissed. So I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Patrick Compton. My bar number is 34425. And I represent Kirkpatrick Bank in this appeal. I also represented Kirkpatrick Bank at trial in this matter. And I think what you've heard today thus far has been consistent with Star Ranch and SEO's litigation strategy throughout the course of this case. And that's to make what should be very simple, extremely and unnecessarily complex. At the inception of this case should have just been a simple claim for reciprocal claims, a case of reciprocal claims of breach of contract over a loan agreement between a lender and its borrower. Instead, SEO, the inside creditor and a member of the borrower, brought tort claims both against Kirkpatrick Bank and as against participants with respect to the loan agreement, Academy Bank being represented here by Ms. Jennifer Salisbury. Now, at great expense to the banks, the case was whittled down through motions practice to what it should have been in the first place, a simple case for breach of contract between the parties. That case went to trial over 6 days. I can assure you Judge Prince was not trying to clear his docket. He heard every single issue that could have possibly been raised. And he entered a judgment at the conclusion of that case, 49 pages of findings and conclusions, finding that the first material breach of the loan agreements was committed by Star Ranch in this case. Now, the evidence with respect to that has to be reviewed for clear error.
The trial was the first breach that he found? Because I understood there was a waiver found as well.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and we'll get to the waiver, but with respect to the first material breach, it was Star Ranch's supplying of materially false information on October 15th through budget requests to Kirkpatrick Bank. It submitted budget information that showed a deficit that was well in excess of $1 million off. And just so that the court has it, the evidence on that, you can look at Exhibit 19 within the trial exhibits, Exhibit 22, Exhibit 27, Exhibit 11, and the trial transcript, day 4, page 210, is actually the testimony of Star Ranch's expert that supports those determinations. As well, there was some issues with respect to recording of some of the testimony at trial. It was de minimis, and the parties entered into a stipulated statement of the record regarding that unrecorded trial testimony. That's at Lexis 42174197. And it identifies the testimony of Nichols and Comitos, who was the managing members, Christine Alcon, who was Nichols and Comitos' CFO. And she supports that determination that the first material breach here was committed by Star Ranch. But one thing I wanted to clear up is who was at trial. SEO was at trial. SEO was a defendant of Star Ranch, of Kirkpatrick Bank's judicial foreclosure claim. Certainly, by the time they got to trial, they'd lost all of their affirmative claims early, but they were there and they defended Kirkpatrick Bank's judicial foreclosure claim. And in fact, within 30 seconds of the case being called to trial, and you can look at the trial transcript, day one, page four, line 18, Joe Coleman, who represented SEO and Star Ranch, entered his appearance when the case was called and identified that he was representing SEO at the trial.
Counsel, can I ask you just a question of clarification? At the time of trial, was the, NNC, the other member, was that still a member of Star Ranch?
No, I'm not sure if NNC at that time was still a member. They were no longer in the lawsuit. In fact, with respect to some of the guarantee releases that we're hearing about, that happened long after the case was filed. In fact, for a good portion of the case, Nichols and Comito and Kirkpatrick Bank had claims as against each other in the course of the litigation.
But the record indicates that SEO was the sole remaining member in Star Ranch?
I'm not sure if the record would indicate they were the sole remaining member, but they did take over as manager. As well, though, Joe Coleman, who represented SEO at trial, was also one of the members of SEO's management team. He was an officer and director, and in fact, he even said as much, same trial transcript, day one, page 67, lines 9 through 12. Of course, if the court needs more to conclude that SEO was in fact at trial, all it has to do is look at the court's order on costs that was issued after trial. The court entered costs jointly and severally against Star Ranch and SEO in favor of Kirkpatrick Bank. That was February 11, 2011. That's ID number 358-99621. The other thing to clean up is the record on appeal in this case involves the trial transcript. Both Star Ranch designated as part of the record, and SEO designated it as part of the record. So SEO clearly participated in the trial. Now, with respect to the relevant dispositions on appeal, I think with respect to SEO, what we have to do is look first at the claim that was dismissed. The claim was for breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Still on their appeal, SEO has failed to address the critical issue, the issue of law that Judge Prince based his determination dismissing that claim on. And that's that, as a matter of fundamental law, you have to have a contract term to which the covenant of good faith and fair dealing can attach. It can't just simply exist in the vacuum. The subordination agreement doesn't have it. It says absolutely nothing with respect to the funding or non-funding of the SEO note. Those obligations, of course, are found within the loan documents as between Kirkpatrick Bank and Star Ranch. That's what ultimately the trial of this case was about, as it should have been. And while there is limited case law on that particular issue, I would direct the court to City of Boulder versus Public Services Company. That's 996 P2D 198. That's a determination of this court from 1999. And I think that case is the most comparable case. It talks about, it's a case where the City of Boulder and various entities who sold electricity to Boulder sued the PSC with respect to these power purchase agreements that they'd entered. And they said, well, there's this general covenant of good faith and fair dealing as it applies to those PPAs. The Court of Appeals correctly looked at the PPAs and said, no, that's not anything in there. There isn't a discretionary term to which that covenant could attach. With respect to the floating debt cap arguments. I think there too, this can be very, very simple. Judge Prince looked first not at the operating agreements that we've heard argued about today. He looked at the applicable agreements as between Kirkpatrick and SEO, the subordination agreement. And the subordination agreement is in itself clear and unequivocal. The language is unambiguous. Subordination was total 100% and complete. What Judge Prince also found when he looked at that was SEO, its representative, its corporate representative, James Ritchie, as well as its attorney, Joe Coleman, reviewed and approved that subordination agreement before it was executed. So any idea, any concept of fraud or inequitable conduct just didn't come into play. If SEO missed its floating debt cap within the subordination agreement, it had an opportunity to include it. It didn't. Its lawyer and its representative reviewed it and approved it as it was. With respect to Star Ranch's claims and the issues on appeal that Star Ranch presents, I think obviously this panel, I know, is very familiar with the economic loss doctrine. I know Judge Rothenberg concurred in one of the seminal decisions, the Parr decision, and in that case in itself involved issues of claims for torts of the, for the tort of interference with, in that case, it was prospective business advantage as opposed to contract. But in that particular case, the Court of Appeals found, looking at it and going through the economic loss doctrine analysis, that if you have a contract, that contract sets the terms and obligations between the parties. Just because there might be some other contract to which one of the parties is involved doesn't create an independent duty with respect to interference with that particular contract. I also know that Judge Roman is quite familiar with this, having issued the Engelman Enterprises decision less than a month ago, I believe it was now. With respect to the economic loss doctrine, though, it's simple. You look at whether or not a contract requires conformance to a particular standard. Here, the loan agreements do that. Because the loan agreements do that, you really don't have to go farther into the contractual context of the BRW factors that are considered. But if the court wanted to, it could simply look at, okay, let's take a look at those factors. What were the claims for relief and what was the relief that was sought? Here, the complaint that Star Ranch filed had a single prayer for relief. It identified the same requested relief with respect to all of the various claims that it pursued both in tort and in contract. Next, you can look at whether there's a separate recognized duty under tort. I would say the duty to administer a loan can only derive from a loan agreement. It's not as though banks are out just handing money to developers up and down the street. There has to be a contract to which that would attach. And then, of course, the other question is there a tort duty that's any different from the obligations under contract? Here, it's clear that everybody at trial said, okay, the funding obligations imposed on Kirkpatrick Bank are imposed by contract. That wasn't in dispute. What was in dispute at trial was, okay, what precisely is the discretion that Kirkpatrick Bank has afforded? We argued for full discretion. Star Ranch said zero discretion. The court looked at it and said, actually, the industry standard here is testified to by experts on both sides. Is reasonableness, and that's what it went with. Well, reasonableness in the industry and ordinary care are fundamentally the same thing. So there is no difference in obligation under tort as opposed to contract. Of course, there's our harmless error mootness argument. Then I'm going to have to sit down and give my co-counsel an opportunity to speak. But I think that's something that the court should consider here. Even if
you have 3.5 minutes between the two of you.
Even if Star Ranch and SEO had been able to pursue these tort claims, the factual predicates of those tort claims were rejected by Judge Prince when he found that, one, Star Ranch breached first, and two, Kirkpatrick Bank in not funding that SEO note acted reasonably. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. Jennifer Salisbury on behalf of Academy Bank, number 37168. Just very, very briefly, Your Honors. Academy Bank still wonders why it was sued in this litigation. Academy Bank's only role was as a participant bank that purchased an interest in the Star Branch note. Judge Prince correctly dismissed all claims asserted against Academy Bank prior to trial. And he did so on the basis of two reasons. The economic loss rule, based upon the BRW versus DeFeci case, talking about an interrelated set of contracts based upon a transaction. But he also did so based upon Rule 8. And that probably is the more of a legal stretch to dismiss claims based upon Rule 8. But what the plaintiff, neither Star Ranch nor Stern Eagles Orchard, was able to do was to articulate in either of their complaints a single fact that said what Academy Bank had done that justified calling it into court. Not just court. We were sued in Mesa County and El Paso County. And now, Your Honors, after 4 years of litigation, after discovery, after turning over, Academy Bank turning over reams of documents, after its loan officer being deposed, after a six-day trial in which one of its loan officers was a witness, and in which Kirkpatrick Bank's representatives testified, I believe, for days, as to the facts and circumstances surrounding the decision not to fund the draws on this note, I submit to Your Honors that the plaintiffs in this case still can't state a single fact, a single thing that Academy Bank did that justifies the litigation that was asserted against it, and the dollars upon dollars and upon dollars that my client has had to spend to pay its attorneys to file motion upon motion upon motion to finally get the claims against it dismissed.
He never filed a motion for groundless and frivolous, as I understand it.
We filed a motion for attorney's fees at the end of the case, and Judge Prince denied that. We elected not to appeal.
Okay.
Thank you. Counsel, you have 3 minutes and 14 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the claim that SEO was at trial, the only issue heard was the foreclosure issue. None of the other issues were heard at trial, and SEO did not have the opportunity to bring any of the other claims and have any of those heard with witnesses and evidence testimony. With regard to the indication that Kirkpatrick Bank did everything right and it was all based on the loan agreements, the subordination agreement was approved by the SEO members and counsel for SEO. However, it was done based on that 40% and based on the guarantees that Nichols and Camino had to bring to the table. SEO would never have subordinated their loan agreement had it not been for that 40% and the guarantee that was there, which the bank subsequently released without their knowledge or approval, leaving them with no recourse whatsoever on the loan.
Well, hadn't your client deemed the borrower had been in default before the bank responded?
That was not until December 2007, and they had failed to fund any of the interest prior to that, Your Honor. They did that in, I believe, October 15th, when Judge Prince said that Star Ranch had breached. They did the same thing on the same day.
Okay.
And the bank actually did not call Star Ranch into breach of contract until March 10th of 2008, so almost 5 months, 6 months later.
When were the guarantees released?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I'd have to look in the record. I don't know exactly when the guarantee was released.
Okay.
And I apologize. The other thing the bank failed to mention is with that draw request back in October of 2007, while they failed to fund the full draw for the interest, they continue to fund their own interest. And so they did not stop funding altogether. They only funded their portion of the loan so that the interest would remain paid up to date without the indication that they would continue to fund SEO or fund Star Ranch with the remaining portion of that so that they would be able to continue the project. The project basically folded at that point. With Nichols and Camino, as soon as the guarantee was released, Nichols and Camino were out. And there was litigation between the bank and Nichols and Camino. However, when Nichols and Camino were released from that guarantee, which was millions of dollars, that was their get-out-of-jail-free card, basically, with the bank did, without SEO having any authority to do so, or the approval of Star Ranch or anybody else. SEO did not give their approval to do that. And it looks like I got to about 5 seconds. Is there anything else, Your Honors?
Nope.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you, counsel, all three of you, for your fine arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.